Welcome to the 14th episode of the 5th season of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday the 28th of August, and in this episode we're going to talk about OggCamp and review the book Ubuntu Made Easy. We will of course cover the latest news, events, bit about Ubuntu, tomorrow's technology today, and go over your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me tonight are Laura, Mark and Alan. Hello everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. All right, so Laura, what have you been doing?
I went to OggCamp.
What's
you
that then?
To OggCamp.
It's a little event.
A little event. Hmm. Okay. Alan, what did you do in the last couple of weeks?
Wow. Harsh. I was on a fundraising. Well, not on it. I was tuned into a fundraising event for the Accessible Computing Framework.
Right.
Over the weekend. Do you remember talking to Jonathan Nadal?
Yes, two or three episodes ago.
Yeah, he had a fundraising drive.
Yes.
To
The kind of 48-hour thing.
Yes, and it was interesting. There was loads of people. They did it via Mumble, and it worked really well.
Cool.
Everyone just dives in and has a bit of a chat and asks questions, and myself and Dan Lynch from Linux Outlaws was there.
Who?
And, yes, and cool. Alan Bell joined in as well, and a few other. Ken Fallon was there.
One of our stunt Alans,
so Alan Bell. Yes, it was nice to have a chat to them about accessibility in open source software in general, and more specifically about Ubuntu.
Cool. Excellent.
Good fun.
Mark.
Hello.
Hello.
I've been using Wubi to install Ubuntu.
Oh, really?
What?
Yeah, really. my girlfriend wanted a new laptop, and it came with Windows on it, and I was going to blow it all away and start again, but here's the rub. We subscribe to Love Film, and we don't have anything that you can watch Love Film streaming on because it uses Silverlight. So I thought, why not keep Windows around as it's already there, not doing anyone any harm? I'll just install Ubuntu alongside it. And because, as is often the way with laptops, it already had four partitions on the hard disk, and I couldn't quite work out which ones I could safely get rid of and which ones I couldn't. So I figured I'd just install alongside using Wubi.
Aren't they getting rid of Wubi?
Yes.
I seem to remember.
I think we had a news item on it.
That it was.
At some point.
It was being turned over to community support, which eventually essentially means it's not going to.
Well, it works. Yeah, I mean, I made the mistake of burning a CD and trying to use that, and that didn't do anything. But then I just downloaded the installer from the website and ran it, and it downloaded what it needed, and it worked.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Excellent. I was very impressed. Does it work all right?
Yeah, it seems fine.
Cool. Mm.
Oh, is she actually going to use it then on her machine, or is it for you to use on her machine?
No, it's for her to use on her machine because we don't have anyone who will support Windows in the house.
Is that where it's just to sign up to as terms and conditions?
You can use whatever you want as long as someone will look after it for you.
As long as that person might be you.
Yes.
Cool.
So, Tony, what have you been up to?
I went to OggCamp.
Yay!
Sounds like a fun packed show.
Yeah. Should we talk about OggCamp?
Let's. So, as we may have mentioned, we went to OggCamp.
Yay!
What's OggCamp then?
Ah.
Well, Mark, you organised it. Would you like to tell us?
Yeah, you single-handedly organised it.
All by myself, yeah. It's a free culture unconference / bar camp / a little bit not a bar camp, which was in Liverpool.
/ bar.
Last weekend. Was it last weekend? It was the weekend before.
Was it?
It was. I know.
Just gone. It was.
Gosh.
Time flies.
Yeah, you're right.
When you're not organising OggCamp. Yeah.
So there might be people at home who are expecting the live show from OggCamp, because we did say that's what this would be, and we wouldn't be doing this now, but we are doing this now.
Yeah.
There were some technical difficulties with the live show that we did, which was a quiz with the Linux Outlaws guys. So unfortunately, we can't bring that to you, mainly because the microphone that Alan and I were using wasn't being recorded.
And of the UPC team, they were probably the most chatty.
And the ones who got the answers right.
Yeah. We couldn't possibly have Tony not there.
No.
No, exactly.
Could we?
So,
but if you do want to see the quiz, it's on YouTube.
Yes.
There's a video of it, and it probably works quite a lot better as a video than it does as just an audio thing.
Yes.
Oh, so God,
if you go to if you go to youtube.com/ogcamptv.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Then you can see it there. It's called It's the Og Camp Quiz. And there's a few other videos on there as well. And I think more are going on.
Yes.
Sort of over the next few weeks as they get processed and uploaded and edited and stuff, which is awesome.
Mm. But the important thing to note is that we won.
Yes, we did win.
By quite some margin.
We absolutely thrashed the Linux Outlaws. We are the champions. Oh, yes.
We win.
Have you got that fanfare, Tony?
Yes, I have. Somewhere. Oh, no, I haven't.
Good.
I've got the drum roll, but I haven't got the fanfare.
Oh, well.
So for those people who did go, they can leave feedback at joined.in/event/ogcamp12, and you can also see everyone else's feedback there.
You can leave a feedback on specific talks and things as well.
Yes, as well as on the event as a whole. Yeah. So you can tell speakers what you thought of their talk, and you can tell us what you thought of the organisation, of what went on, and what we can do better next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always things to
Which
learn.
Which implies...
basically that there's probably going to be a next
Yay!
Time.
Excellent. Cool. Right. So what happened? Who went up and how?
We all did.
We all did.
Drove with Andy Smith from Bitfolk.
Yes.
Which was good, not being on my own in the car, and he talked to me for 4 hours all the way up there. Aww. Which kept me awake.
That was,
which
nice. Was good. Four yeah. hours?
Or thereabouts.
Wish I was that lucky. It took me about seven.
You didn't look at the Google traffic.
Well, I looked it in and thought, I'll be all right.
Well, you looked at it before you left, but not again.
Yeah.
But when we eventually all got to Liverpool,
yes,
we saw the lovely hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. The Adelphi
Hotel. The words faded glamour were...
pretty much sums it up.
...were used quite a lot during the weekend.
I don't know. There was something quite quaint about it. I mean, it was clearly an old... a bit tired hotel.
Yes. Oh, I liked it.
But, yeah,
it's quite warm.
I would have liked it.
Apart from being quite warm.
I had the furthest room away from reception that you could possibly get. Yeah.
Cool.
Yes, I know I need the exercise. You don't need to, you don't need to rub it in by making it room 679 or whatever. As far away as you could possibly be. In fact, I could see my car, which was in a car park miles away from the hotel, from my room.
Yeah,
that's how far it was.
The special car park that was essentially just a demolished building.
With CCTV cameras.
Yes.
Me and Mark made the mistake of getting impatient with the people queuing at the lifts one evening and walked up, what was it, five staircases?
Oh, God, that was lots of stairs.
We nearly died at the fourth floor.
Yeah, the lifts were the slowest lifts in the world, with a kind of vaguely angry-sounding woman doing the voiceover.
Yeah.
In the wrong order.
Yeah.
That was annoying.
I guess
the reception. She clearly had a Scouse accent, but was trying to hide it as well,
yes.
Which was quite weird.
Yes. Mm.
Those stairs probably felt or were further because all the ceilings were absolutely giant.
That's yes. true. Yeah,
so
we're doing, like,
floor was much bigger than normal floors. Yeah.
I'll tell you what about the stairs. Coming down them on the Saturday morning was an experience.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd sobered up by that point. But more on that story later.
Yes. So that's five minutes on the hotel. Yeah. What about the event itself?
So the venue. Tell us about the venue, Tony.
It was big and white and lots of glass. Mm. It was very, very big, which meant we had lots of space to do stuff, but also quite a lot of space for people to wander around looking a bit confused.
Yeah.
It was the Art and Design Academy for Liverpool John Moores University.
So fairly spectacular. It's only 2 years old or something. So it had all the modern projectors and PA and stuff, and all of that stuff just worked really well.
It was brilliant. I mean, they did loads to help out, like,
they were brilliant
in terms of getting us into the venue, getting equipment set up, getting bits of kit we needed, and they did all that as the event sponsors as well. So massive thanks to them.
Yeah, indeed.
There was also an outdoor area where we had a geek nick, some grass, and we made the most of that. It was the weather was good.
Yep.
And everyone sat outside and had some food out on the grass in between, talks in the morning and afternoon. Plenty of areas to break out for people to have conversations in corridors, and there's a lot of that going on.
There was a cafe as well, which I think was a really good idea.
Yes.
Mm. And we had vouchers to give away so people could get free tea and coffee and things.
Yep. Thanks to ScraperWiki.
Yes. Did you know that they were the Leaf on Bold Street that we went to on the Sunday night?
Yes,
the
they have an actual fixed abode, which is very good
as well. Which is lovely.
Yeah. So there were talks as well, apparently.
Yeah, that was sort of the point, really. So we had
No.
We had an excellent scheduled track. of course, which I organised.
That was
so
the bit you did, wasn't it?
That was the bit I did, yeah.
Truly excellent.
Yeah, which was good. We had some pretty good speakers there, some popular talks and some less popular talks.
Yeah,
but I think they were all well enjoyed by the feedback that people have given. Mm. I mean, yeah, the feedback that we've got is amazingly positive.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, I mean, there's one or two. I mean, there's some things which we know we did wrong, like the registration desk wasn't in the right place, so there was a queue. But then there was going to be a queue, even if they were just queuing outside instead of inside. Mm. And
it gives us a bit of an ego trip.
Yeah. And yeah, I think the exhibition was a bit hard to find on the first day, but we sorted that out and moved it to somewhere a bit better. But there were loads of other tracks for people to offer talks, because it was, after all, a bar camp. And of course, people did, which is always good when you organise a bar camp. People come along and do talks.
Almost every slot was filled up, I think.
Yeah, pretty much.
We had a few little niggly problems with the campfire manager.
We did.
Losing the odd talk here and there. And
not
being
my fault.
Not being completely clear. But, I mean, it's one of those things that it gets developed for a year.
Yeah.
And we don't use it for a year. And then the next time we use it, it's changed a little bit. And we have to, you know, relearn it and re-explain it to everyone, and
it's kind of like knocking a post-it note off.
I think it was probably quite a lot better used this year, because it was probably a lot easier to use, especially for mobile phones and stuff. Because so we should probably mention John Spriggs, Jack Weirden, Heed, and a few other parties whose names I don't know off the top of my head, but they are the guys who wrote Campfire Manager, and they did a really nice job of making a lovely mobile interface for it, which was just dead easy to use.
So the basic premise is you want to give a talk, you go to the website and you suggest a talk that you want to give, and then it shows up in a kind of limbo state for everyone else, and then people can vote for it, and by just clicking on it and saying I want to attend this, it bubbles up the list of talks, and then it gets scheduled into a room, and then you 15 minutes before the time that's scheduled to go, it's locked in that room, isn't it? And then people know exactly which room they need to go to, so they're not running around like headless chickens finding talks.
Yeah,
and that worked pretty well.
It did. Yeah. There was a bit of a hiccup at the start where it wasn't actually doing the scheduling based on votes bit, but I managed to sort of gloss over that by doing it manually when no one was looking, and I think that worked quite well. People still knew where the talks were. They still gave the talks,
And we had a couple of TV screens, big screens.
Yeah,
up. And that works really well. I mean, when I go to UDS, the Ubuntu Developer Summit, we have a tool called Summit that we use, and it does much the same kind of thing without the voting.
Yeah.
But it does do voting in the background, similar kind of thing. But it's nice to have those screens, because people congregate around the screens and say, "Oh, what
see
are you
what's
going to?
On? Work out the plan. Oh, I'm going what to that they later. Want to see and where it is."
Yeah, it's very social. Thing to have them on the big screens rather than everyone just looking at the event on their phone and then wandering off individually.
Yeah. I was cunningly placed the photography area next to one of the big screens in the reception for my photography project.
We could probably mention your photography project.
Well,
were you taking photos of weddings?
Not at the event. No, there was nobody there actually getting married. Maybe, you know, in a future year, who knows. But the... I wasn't offering, I was just saying... If somebody wants
Cilla to... Silla Black over here. Yeah. You're going to have to buy a new hat.
I have several. So I was doing a thing with volunteers, like Tony Hughes and Ilka, Aid Bradshaw's girlfriend, helped out as well, taking lots of photos. Ilka
and an attendee in her own right, of course.
Well, yes, but...
she found it more interesting than the photographer. Yeah.
She's not a geek, so she doesn't particularly have an interest in all the geeky stuff. So she was really pleased to have something she could get into, which was the photography.
Oh, cool.
And she took more than I did in the end.
Worked out really well, taking those photos.
It did. The first day, like, people were a bit, okay, yeah, well, a few people came up and did it. And then I showed the slideshow on the last day, and then people really seemed to get the idea. So I wish I'd shown the slideshow of the ones I'd done on Saturday at the end of Saturday.
Yeah.
And then more people would probably have engaged on the Sunday. But we still had, I think, over 130 images, and some of those were multiple people in different images. So, it worked out really well. And they're going to be up online as a sort of memento of the.
It was really good at the very end. Sorry, not to skip over everything to the very end.
Right.
But with those photos.
When it all stopped.
Going with, you know, some motivational music going in the background. Mm.
Just sitting with everyone and watching them. It was
everyone
really
got
nice.
That community feel when there's photos of each other, and some of them were quite comedic and some of them were just sweet.
Yeah, there was kind of like people going, "Oh," and people going, "Ack is wrong," that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good.
So were there any, did you get to, other than the photos, did you get to go to any of the talks at all?
No, not really, but I did enjoy not having an earpiece on and you know, that kind of constant background chatter of things going
on. I didn't enjoy not having an earpiece on, but we didn't have enough radio.
Oh, you were too far down the pecking order.
Something like that.
So some of the talks I went to.
Go on then.
I went to Nathan Dumont's talk about his Og Box.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Which is a little hardware device.
Yeah, that seemed to be a really popular one.
Yeah,
people seemed to like that.
And it was open hardware project that he's devised this music player device that he want him and Katie want to have in their house so they can play music, you know, through speakers and stuff. And designed it from scratch and has written the software. And it's pretty complicated what he's done and really low level some of the coding that he's done. It's not just, you know, load a file and kick off M player or something like that. It's pretty intensive stuff. That was really good.
Cool.
There was a load of Lightning talks.
Oh, yeah.
They were really popular.
That was really good.
Yeah. That was good fun.
Expertly hosted, I thought.
Yeah. Yes, well done, Mark.
Well, it actually was. Mark was the most severe, like, timekeeper of Lightning talks I've ever seen.
The thing I've always
brilliant.
Thought about Lightning talks is what makes them really good is seeing what people spit out in a really short space of time to try and get their message across. So I was quite strict about 5 minutes
and one question
because I didn't want them standing there and starting a debate.
If you dared to try and ask a second question.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There was some confusion over the course of the day as to how long the Lightning talks would be. It was like some people were saying it was 15, some was 10, and then it was like, no, it's 5. to crowbar them all in. And so a couple of people had written talks that they were going to run as 1 hour talks. I think Dominic and John Faulkner both wrote talks that were going to be an hour long, and they managed to shrink them both down to 5 minutes, which was unfortunate because they were both interesting subjects.
But amusing.
But we did. We got a lot of feedback that people want more Lightning talks next year, and I don't think we'd done them before. No. So I think definitely more next year.
Yeah, excellent. They were really good. Yeah, there was a lot of mixture as well because there were prepared talks with slides, there were prepared talks without slides, there were off your cuff talks like ACT did, and Dorbers did a kind of semi-rant.
Right,
which was brilliant. Was
I enjoyed the Scraper Wiki.
Mm. Yeah, that was really interesting.
That was good fun. They had a working demo, and one person giving the demo while another person talks about the, you know, the projects and what they do. And so I the one thing that I get out of Og Camp is I learn about a whole load of stuff while I'm there. Which is really the whole point is.
I went to the Enigma talk, which was good. Mm. And somebody in the review, somebody said this is a perfect example of what a Barcamp talk should be because it wasn't too technical, but it was talking about something, the technology, and it gave the context of it. And it was just really nicely put together.
I can't wait to see that one on video. And I know there's a whole thing about the amount of work is involved in videoing 4 tracks. And Matt Daubney will be, you know, sweating over those for days to come. But I'm really looking forward to seeing the things I missed.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to seeing a talk because I didn't get to see any of them.
I think the only thing I saw was, apart from the things that I was in, was the Stephen Fry video.
Yes. I'd already seen that.
Which,
Wait, what? Which was Stephen good. Fry video?
Stephen Fry video.
That's also up on YouTube and that appears to be quite popular.
5,000 hits so far.
In about 2 days.
When about, you know, 350 people came to our camp.
Yeah.
But they got other stuff as well.
Yes. So Stephen Fry had sent us a video message answering some questions that the community had asked and just sort of generally being Stephen Fry into a camera.
Especially for our camp.
That was
the amazing thing.
Yeah, it was great. And we played it just before we did the quiz thing and it went down really, really well. In fact, I think it was the best attended thing.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
A video.
They didn't come
somebody
for us.
Who wasn't there.
Yeah. Right. And of course we had the annual raffle cast.
Oh, man. Oh, I love that. That's always such good fun.
Yeah.
That was good.
Where we gave away, tried to give away, the Nexus 7 donated by Transitive Technologies.
Transitive, back.
You say. Yes. Transitive Technologies.
Yeah.
Yes. We had to auction it in the end because the guy who won it didn't want it.
Yeah.
And said, I want to auction it for Og Camp.
So now we've got a bit more in the Og Camp kitty for next year, thanks to some furious bidding between several.
That was fun.
That was bonkers. And at the point when the guy said, no, just auction it off, it was a very ad hoc auction that we had
to have
there.
Yeah, we were sort of, can we do that? How are we going to take money?
And then we started doing it, and then you could see instantly
someone offered a tenner, then we were like, oh, we're doing it then.
Lorna Jane just shouted out, I'll give you a fiver for it. And somebody's like, that's not very much. Yeah, that's the point. points.
Yeah, Dan was like, Dan was sitting down next to you. He's like, you can't pay a fiver for it. And then someone else said, tenner.
And
he was like, oh, right, yeah. Auction.
This is the concept of an auction.
Yes. Everyone getting their smartphones out to find out exactly what the retail value of them was.
And then going way over it anyway.
Yeah. I think it went bonkers and went straight past it, which is bizarre.
But there are a couple of other things as well. We had the Open Hardware Jam going on.
Oh, of course.
Going
we
on,
can't miss the Open
which was
jam.
Brilliant, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yes.
It was actually, yeah, rather than just talking about things, people doing things.
Yeah. And, making computers and making T-shirts and making bags. And
bags out of old T-shirts.
Bags out. So last year, I came home with a giant box full of all of last
Thank
year's
you for looking
leftover
after
Old Camp T-shirts. And I was so happy to drive them back to Liverpool and give them to someone who made bags and things out of them.
Yeah. So it was, awesome. I was packed when I was up there. And people were, there was something to do with kites and all sorts of weird...
Oh, yeah, kites that play music.
And people making, like, LED... There was a laptop with, like, a homemade LED thing on the lid, which was, like, displaying a pattern. And, yeah, making 8-bit computers and... Raspberry Pis.
That 8-bit computer was fantastic.
Fignition.
It had no, the Fignition. It had no external keyboard. It had eight
microcorded
keyboard. And the guy was tapping out commands in fourth on this little thing. I was going, look, I'll just show you how it works. Like smacking these
buttons.
Most
people have
mad.
Trouble with an ordinary keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. And it was brilliant. It was good fun.
Yeah.
And we also had the exhibition.
Yes.
Which was
Josette.
Josette was there for my rise.
The ever lovely Josette.
But a whole heap of other things there.
We
FSFE
had
and
FSFE and the Open Rights Group and the
Bitemark.
Bitemark, of course, our sponsors. Bitemark Hosting.
In fact, Bitemark sent us this message.
Hey, it's Tim Dobson from Bitemark. I just wanted to thank everybody for making this the most friendly conference in the UK, and I'm really happy to be a part of it. Thanks again for everyone who came and to all the organisers.
Oh, that was lovely. Aww. In fact, he's not the only person who said specifically that it was the most friendly conference they've been to.
Indeed.
That's really cool. Nice.
And one of the other exhibition stands was Ken Fallon from Hacker Public Radio, who happened to send us this message.
This is Ken Fallon. Just like to say, had a fantastic time at our camp. You all did a brilliant job. However, the mug bug was overlooked for the second year in a row. Black mugs. How can I possibly know how dark my tea is? But all that aside, everybody did a fantastic job. Big shout out to the crew. Brilliant venues. Hotel was great. Other venue was great. And counting down to next year. Thanks, everybody, for all the interviews. And look forward to next year. Bye.
Aww.
That's a good point, actually.
If the worst thing we've done is the wrong colour mug
for one person,
which we sold loads of.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And if it's if you want to hear some of the people who were at Og Camp, if you go to hackerpublicradio.org, is it?
HPR.org.
Ken was basically running around with a little recorder, just grabbing people and interviewing them, and there's some really interesting conversations there.
Mm.
And it's not HPR.org.
If you Google Hacker Public Radio, I'm sure it's the first hit.
And there's an interesting crossover where Fab was going around with the camera talking to people, and he ran into Ken. And then they started interviewing each other. So if you listen to the audio, you've got one side of the conversation. If you watch the video, you've got the other. It's quite surreal.
So a big thank you to Laura Tchaikovsky, who organised the exhibition area, put a lot of work getting that in.
Yes, and sorting out the hotel for us as well.
Oh, right, okay.
All right.
Yes, she's good at haranguing people into giving us good deals.
Yes. So, thank you, Laura. And
the crew
and the crew, of course, who could forget the crew
who sold all the t-shirts and almost all the mugs.
Yes, Emma and Charlie and the other lady whose name temporarily escapes me did fantastic job of flogging all of the old t-shirts and all the new t-shirts
and
all
mugs.
The mugs.
It's funny, at one point we got the old vintage mugs from last year out of the box.
Yeah.
And they went, oh, what are these? Oh, they're last year's. Well, this year's ones are £5. Let's make these £1. Last year's ones £1. Someone ran up and went, I'll give you £1 for
that
it.
Was
took
me.
One away. And she
that
went,
was
right,
me.
That's too cheap. £2. It's like dynamic pricing.
Yeah. Yes. Demand-led pricing.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, we made even more for the old camp kitty for next year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff.
So, but the rest of the crew did a fantastic job as well, carrying boxes and lifting and shifting. Making it all happen. So it really is a team effort. And although I didn't have anything to do with the organisation of it, I had a great weekend and lots of drinking and things at the parties and the bars. I stayed up till stupid o'clock in the morning talking to lots of people who I don't see for most of the rest of the year and only catch up at Og Camp. So that alone is a good reason for me to... get involved again in the future years. And
See you all next time.
See you all next time, yes.
And now it's time for the news. Samsung has lost a US patent case to Apple over copying of iPhone features in Galaxy S and Galaxy S2 phones. Samsung has been ordered to pay $1 billion in damages.
And is going to appeal.
Cool.
Didn't they also win something?
I think they won another case where in another country it was decided they didn't copy Apple.
I think that was South Korea, the home of Samsung.
Interesting. And in the home of Apple, they lose. Interesting.
For one billion, whatever the South Korean currency is.
Mm. Although, apparently it doesn't really impact on the amount of profit they made. It's something, they made something like 26 billion off of their
phones. No, but it's a symbolic thing. And the fact that it's reinforcing the whole idea that you can patent the look and feel of a device is kind of blur.
Nobody else can do it for 20 years.
The first human to set foot on another world, Neil Armstrong, has sadly died.
Aww. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Two presenters talking in the corner of the studio. I don't know what they're talking about.
Don't worry.
Okay.
Yes, it was very sad.
Yes.
Died after complications following heart surgery.
Yes. So Buzz Aldrin is, I guess, the next...
the next one to go.
He's the next person onto the moon, and he's still alive, so he's kind of the next most senior one living. I don't know.
He did quite a nice statement.
Yes, it was on his website. Mm. Yes, very sad. Twitter have shelled out $15,000. That doesn't quite work the same as a billion, does it? to become a silver sponsor of the Linux Foundation just days after annoying lots of developers by reducing usage caps for their API.
After reading this, I went and had a look at the Linux Foundation sponsors page. It's a giant list, who's who, of, you know, every company you've heard of that uses Linux in some way or another. Which, yeah, it's not surprising Twitter get on there. Cause
no. It's quite cheap. It's a lot cheaper to sponsor OgCamp, I'd like to point out. Just in case anybody's listening.
VMware, Intel, and NEC allegedly may be about to join OpenStack Foundation.
Basically, there's an OpenStack board meeting going on at the moment.
This is what we were discussing
behind
the scenes.
Breaking news! And, basically, one of the things up for discussion is whether to accept VMware, Intel, and NEC's respective applications to become gold sponsors of the foundation.
Is this good or bad?
I think it's good.
Okay.
Fair enough.
I bet it's a lot cheaper to sponsor OgCamp than it is to
become the ES.
And the Raspberry Pi Foundation have announced they've added pay-for support for additional codecs, which will allow the device to play MPEG-2 and VC1 video, as well as the included H.264 codec.
Interesting. So MPEG-2 DVB preview type streaming.
That's why it's interesting.
The reason they did it is because they heard that a lot of people were using them as media devices.
Yes.
And because things like Freeview and other DVB providers comes down as MPEG-2.
So you could stick a little USB tuner in one of the USB ports, presumably.
Well, not even that. If you record using a back end like Myth TV.
Oh, yes.
And you want your Raspberry Pi to be a front end.
Yeah.
Then if you do the hardware decoding in the chip on the Raspberry Pi, then you don't need to transcode it along the way to the Raspberry Pi. You can just stream straight from disk to the Raspberry Pi and onto your screen.
Mm-hmm.
And
is it powerful enough for that?
Yes.
That's the point of having a dedicated chip, is that it can do it better than using the CPU.
And the only codec that they licensed from Broadcom, or licensed from whoever gives you the H.264 license, was H.264. Which is fine. It's an okay codec, but because loads of people have libraries and libraries and libraries of stuff they've recorded off telly, which is in MPEG-2, they either don't use the Raspberry Pi or they have to re-encode it all as H.264, which is a bit of a pain. But the interesting thing is, if you buy the codecs, it's tied to one Raspberry Pi, the serial number of one device.
Cool.
Yay for free software.
Excellent.
And we have some events.
Yay.
There's SkyCon on the 6th and 7th of October over in Ireland. This is Laura Tchaikovsky's event over there.
Is it?
She's helping organise it.
One of the... Yes.
Yes, it's going to be good. I'm going to be going.
Oh, you are now?
I am. Almost certainly
going. Are you giving a talk?
I'm giving a talk. Guess which talk?
Is it about weddings?
Podcasting for fun and frolics?
Fun and what?
I don't know what you get out of it.
Yes, that talk.
And I thought you'd retired that talk.
No, he felt so too.
I just hadn't had the opportunity to give it for a while, so I'm going to dust it off, polish it up, bring it bang up to date, and make it fantastic for all the good people at SkyCon. Hack Manchester on the 27th and 28th of October is happening in Manchester, surprisingly, hence the name Hack Manchester. It's a 24-hour coding competition where teams of four people code for 24 hours. Taking part at the Museum of Science and Industry as part of the Manchester Science Festival. HackManchester.com is where you can find out more. Sounds like fun.
Indeed it does.
Is Are we running end? Behind That'll... time? Is no, that why no. you're going so fast?
No. That is the end of the events.
Hello, and welcome to Tomorrow's Technology Today. I'm Douglas Austin Cambridge. Good day to all our listeners, wherever you are around the British Empire, or indeed Newcastle, Wahe, and Gan Up the Tyne, as they say. And it's a good day to our charming hostess, Miss Deirdre Morris Oxford.
Good day, Douglas. And it gives me great pleasure to announce that before long, I won't need to meet you in the studio ever again.
Why ever not, Deirdre?
There is a suite of inventions for remote conferences that will make conference venues a thing of the past.
Virtually a thing of the future, Deirdre.
Yes, Douglas. For example, a Mr. John Logie Baird of Scotland believes that real-time, over-the-air transmission of moving pictures with synchronized radio sound, will make face-to-face meetings unnecessary. Conference papers may be sent out and amended using wireless telegraphy, and everyone will be able to attend events without leaving the home.
But that's not the point of a conference, Deirdre. What about all the other things you go to conferences for?
Overpriced tea and muffins, bad sandwiches, coffee that looks and tastes like boot polish diluted in dishwater.
What about the bar afterwards? You might as well go drinking by yourself.
You often go drinking by yourself.
Yes, that's not the point. Surely one goes to conferences for the people.
If you mean awkward social silences, bodily odours and crashing boredom, surely that's an advantage of the remote conference.
I beg to differ, Deirdre. One can have the most thrilling encounters in seaside hotels. I mean exchanges. I mean stimulating, rigorous and lively exchanges. Intellectual ones, of course.
I think we know what you mean. Conferences are no place for respectable ladies.
Why ever not?
Being propositioned by short, bald men with bared moustaches...
I'm quite tall and have a jolly good moustache.
Not to mention being propositioned by tall, drunk, married men.
Are you sure you're going to the right conferences, Deirdre? It sounds like you need a sort of unconference.
I'd rather not go at all. Why not save one's travel time and money and use the wonders of technology to communicate while staying at home with one's family?
I think you might have just hit the proverbial nail on the head, old girl. Well, that's all from Tomorrow's Technology Today. Toodlepip and God Save the King.
We've been sent something to review.
Ooh.
And this time, it's not a low-cost, cheap piece of hardware.
Oh.
It's a book.
Is it a low-cost, cheap book?
It's a real dead tree book.
I have no idea how much it costs. Oh, $35 by the look of it, according to the back.
It's about £4.
I was contacted by No Starch Press. They've released a new version of Ubuntu Made Easy, a project-based introduction to Linux. And it's by Rickford Grant and Phil Bull. And it's been updated for 12.04, Ubuntu 12.04.
Ah, cool. Which is obviously an LTS release.
Yes.
Making it a useful book.
Yes, and actually there's a CD in the back, which I would presume contains Ubuntu 12.04, but I don't know, actually.
I
haven't opened the CD, so I don't know.
Let's hope so.
I think one of the chapters in the book takes you through using the CD to try and install.
Cool.
Ubuntu.
Cool.
Okay. So, what about this book?
So, it's... I actually read the PDF before they sent me the book. They were kind enough to send me a PDF version of it. And I managed to crack through the entire book in just a couple of hours. And that's mostly because I know most of the content already. Right. But whilst reviewing it, I picked up a few things. But one of the main things that I like about it is the style with which it's written. It's really easy to read, and it's written in a fairly relaxed tone and goes through all the steps right from the basics of what is Ubuntu, I've never heard of this thing before, all the way through to using it as your daily machine and using it for creative purposes and getting online and all that kind of stuff and adding additional software. And it's broken down into pretty logical chapters. Starts off with what is Linux, moves on to actually getting to know the Ubuntu desktop and connecting online, trying out email and surfing and all that kind of stuff.
So each chapter is a different kind of collection of activities.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for example, there's an entire section on organizing your files and directories, and there's a whole chapter on customizing the look and feel of the desktop, that kind of thing.
So
you managed to squeeze out a whole chapter on that with Unity.
Yeah, it's not a huge chapter. It's 20 pages.
So what's the audience? Is it people who are already familiar with computers and this is introducing them to Ubuntu?
I think so, yeah. It would appeal, I think, to someone who's, heard mention of Ubuntu or heard mention of Linux and wants to give it a try, but right. has some trepidation about just, sticking a CD in off of a magazine cover and, not having anything to help them or guide them through, the first few steps, because, it is quite daunting when you first install the CD and or even just put the CD in before you even install it. Mm. It's quite daunting, it's quite unfamiliar if you're used to Windows, which most people will be. I think this probably wouldn't appeal to my mum 2 years ago who didn't never used a computer. I think if you have some background, then it makes more sense.
But you put her on Ubuntu.
I did, with virtually zero training whatsoever. But she has a very restricted use. She just opens a web browser and off she goes. She doesn't actually install a load of apps or anything like that. But this goes through going beyond just using a web browser and just using it to get your email. It's, going about synchronizing your MP3 player doing work-related stuff.
Yeah, it's probably more aimed at, say, my mum, who would buy that sort of thing because she'd get the basics and then want to know what else she could do.
Right.
Yeah. I had a quick look through before we started the show today, and I was kind of curious as to some of the areas they chose are obviously of broad appeal, how to use your iPod with Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. And some of them are a little more esoteric. There is a obligatory chapter on the command line, including who am I and the finger command. I've been using Linux for 14 years and have never had to use the finger command for anything.
I might have used who am I once.
Yeah. I think that's a byproduct of the authors having a lengthy experience in Linux. And maybe they need to remember that that some of these things need to be dead now.
I suppose it could be, but it could be an example of these are the sort of things the command line can do. There's a file here and the finger command reads it from here. So that sort of starts to...
It's something very, very basic.
I would have stuck it at the back concepts. Of the book, though.
It's kind of the question I was going to ask, actually, because I think you get a lot of these kind of books where people... The author starts at the beginning and just goes on to the end and fills in all the gaps in between, so it's complete, as opposed to going, what do these kind of people actually need to know and want to know? And not just shoving a bit about this just because everybody should know it.
Right. Mm.
How on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is... one way or the other, anyway. How good is it in terms of being targeted at the right people as opposed to just being a complete book about the beginnings?
It's not comprehensive. It's not massively comprehensive. There's plenty of room for you to learn more stuff.
Yeah, that's good.
And it does give you some direction as to where you can go next. And it also talks about the community and how you could get involved and that kind of stuff. But it does. But that's right at the very end of the book.
Does it talk about achievements?
Yes, it does.
Oh, wow.
Cool. It does talk about Jono's
achievements.
Yeah, Jono's achievements.
It doesn't look too weighty. That's kind of getting at. It's not just full for the sake of it. It seems to be quite a decent size.
400 odd pages
and there's content. There's a lot of screenshots and things in there as well, so it's not just solid text.
Yeah.
And there's quite a good index as well.
There were a couple of quirky things that that I discovered, and I think these might be a byproduct of who's written these. I think Phil is does a lot of documentation for the GNOME project. So there's a couple of things in here that kind of stand out a little bit. Like there's mentions of a GNOME sticky notes app in the book.
Right.
Right.
Which we don't ship in Ubuntu by default. We've got Tomboy, and that's on the CD, and that's kind of the note app that's been around for ages. Yeah. And that kind of like jumped off the page. I've never heard of this thing. Okay, maybe that's just me because I don't use a stock GNOME desktop, so I'd not really used that app, but that just seemed a bit strange for that to be included. And there was a bit where they talked about installing applications, and they talked about installing Blender and how that's a really good if you're creative and 3D stuff. But the way they talked about installing it was to go to blender.org and download it and install it. Huh. Not open the software center,
type in Blender.
Let's type in Blender and press OK. And when they talked about installing MP3 support, they went through it manually rather than saying double-click an MP3 file and see what happens.
and it actually does
it all for you. It was like, right, now you need to do this and you need to install this codec and stuff. And that jarred a little bit because that detracts from the whole making it easy.
Yeah.
The whole making it easy is you double-click an MP3 and it does it for you.
And it's not like they were writing to the previous version because it's done that for ages.
Yeah. Mm. I'm not sure why that was there. It seemed unnecessary to me.
When it explains how to do things that aren't in there by default, things like installing Flash, installing MP3 support, does it touch on the sort of the non-free aspect of it, or does it just say there isn't MP3 support, this is how to get it?
I think it does, actually. I don't remember the specifics of that bit, but I'm pretty sure there was a bit about the non-free stuff, like video. There's a bit about the video drivers and where you can get them. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't go into a huge detail. It's not like it's got like the FSF manifesto on every other page or anything like that. It's the GNU manifesto. It's practical and it's accessible as well. It didn't feel like something that was lecturing at me. Mm-hmm. It felt like I could get involved and actually try out the various things in here and they seemed to work. I tried a few of the example things and it worked okay.
It's quite interesting. You say it's a 400 odd page book and this is Ubuntu made easy. Do we need 400 pages a book? Should we need 400 pages a book about how to make Ubuntu easy? Isn't it supposed to be easy already?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Have you got a good answer?
Well, I mean, if you put anyone in front of a completely unfamiliar operating system, put anyone in front of a Mac, and they've never used a Mac before, they're going to want to know, well, how do I find my files and which of these icons is the web browser? I mean, Safari, if I'd never used a Mac before, I would never know that Safari was the web browser. It doesn't scream web browser at me. How do I access parental controls or something that's buried deep in some settings menu? There's always going to be some level of unfamiliarity. So I'm okay with the fact that there's bits that of Ubuntu that are not immediately accessible to people who've never used it before.
Progressive disclosure.
Really?
Don't show them all at once.
Yeah, I think people probably would explode a bit if they saw it all at once.
Yeah. And not know what they're looking at.
We've had discussions in the past about should Ubuntu have a quick start video when you first install, and something that guides you through the
sort of like an introduction to all the different parts of Unity over the course of half an hour.
Yeah. Or an interactive guide, or just something simple to show you where everything is, and that's with the Ubuntu manual project, their original goal was to write a manual that would go on the CD, that would have a link on the desktop or a link in the menu somewhere so that people could get straight to the manual and see. But then that gives you the wrong impression.
Yeah.
It's like, why do you need a manual?
Yeah. I was just wondering whether I can't think who needs that very, very basic stuff, because as you say, if you gave it to your mum who has a very limited set of tasks, giving her a book with it probably wouldn't be that useful. You need to, like, you set it up and then show her how to use it and she's fine. Giving it to, say, my mum, just because there's another example, she probably wouldn't read the very basic introductory stuff. She'd be looking for the bit more power user stuff. So I'm kind of wondering whether those introductory chapters are useful to anybody and whether it's just that nobody dares leave them out just in case somebody needs it. And actually, they might be better served by, as you say, an interactive tour or something that...
A leaflet.
A leaflet, a getting started leaflet. Yeah, so yeah. You don't actually need those very basic chapters on how to find your files and stuff. It's just you have that kind of guidance within the UI, but then you buy a book if you want to explore things because you're not sure that you found everything yourself.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, overall, I think it's a good book.
Does it make Ubuntu easy?
It seemed to clarify, you know, all the kinds of, well, why is this box popping up? Or what do I need that for? Or how do I do that? Kind of questions that people, you know, when you very first show them something new, that the questions that they're likely to ask. And it does, they have moved some of the deeper stuff to the back, to the appendix. So, for example, there's a bit about installing Ubuntu from a USB drive. Now, the fact that the book has got a CD in the back means that you may well be installing off a CD. And so putting details about how to install off a USB key, given there isn't one in the book, is possibly redundant. So they've shoved that to the back. There's also a bit about 64-bit computing, which for most people nobody really cares. It's just, I want the desktop to work and... You know, okay, it's frustrating that you can't see all your memory or, you know, you're not using the absolute capacity of your machine. So, but most people don't even know about it. So that's at the back. And then the final one that's at the back is manually partitioning your hard drive, that perennial subject that nobody, you know.
What about LVM and RAID? Is that there?
I don't think it is, actually. What about encrypted home? There is a section about security. It's called Defending the Nest. Cause it's all alluding to, like, the penguins. And yeah. So
do penguins build nests?
Well, skipping over that.
We're
defending
about
this
penguins.
Hypothetical penguin nest by encrypting files and shredding files when we delete them and setting up a firewall, those kind of things.
Shred the files.
It's a iffy metaphor, isn't it?
So I'm moving over to Laura for her questions rather than Tony's ridiculous questions.
I've got a good question. Is it a 32-bit version on the DVD or CD then? Right, not the 64-bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left on this segment now.
So I think we should give this away.
Really?
Yes, in the competition.
Wow. It's really good, isn't it?
Yes.
It's definitely worth having. Yes. Particularly if you're Laura's
mom. Even if it's, you know, not something that you
would use,
it might be useful for, you know, someone you know.
Yeah. Okay. So, we're going to set a question. Alan, can you remember the question?
I think I can remember the question.
Okay.
But I might have to alt-tab and then scroll down to find out what the question was. Oh, yes. So, the question to win this book, Ubuntu Made Easy, which we will ship to you...
Regardless of where you are?
Regardless of where you are, even if you're a penguin on the North Pole?
South Pole.
Even if you're a penguin in Antarctica. The question is, what one thing would you do to make Ubuntu easier? Email your answer to competition@ubuntu-uk.org.
And if you send it to the normal address, we don't let it in.
Yeah, it's not all winning. So email
There are other restrictions on your answer.
Yeah, I haven't got there yet. So email to competition@ubuntu-uk.org. The closing date is the 24th of September. And the one...
Two episodes time?
Yes. Yeah. So it's two episodes. And the one restriction I'm going to put on this is that you have to describe how you would make Ubuntu easier in 140 characters or less. Not how you would make it easier in 140 characters, but describe
in
how
140
you would
characters how you would make it
so
easier.
So we don't want an essay, we want something you would do.
So that we can read them out if they're any good.
Exactly, yes.
And the winner is going to be announced in episode 16, so in two episodes' time.
And it will be the one that's most interesting.
Yes.
Excellent.
So don't be dull.
Get your answers in, and good luck, everybody.
And now it's time for the bit about Ubuntu, Tony.
And there is a new photo lens for Ubuntu 12.10. I was quite excited about this, then I realised it was something in Unity, not an actual camera lens.
No, you thought it was a cheap lens.
An actual camera lens.
Oh, I see.
Yes, photo lens, camera lens.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. So yeah. What's new and fantastic about this then?
It's a way of searching your photos.
Both online and locally. So
The previous lenses, yes. The previous lenses we've got is searching your applications, your files, your music and your videos. So it made sense to have one for searching your photos.
Was there not already a photos one?
Nope.
Okay.
In a word.
Maybe we'll talk about that off air. But yes, I like the fact you can filter it with metadata.
Yes. Yeah,
so I just remember a product demo that involved a photo lens.
No Tony raises eyebrows about. Knowingly.
No idea what you're talking about.
But this has a filter where you can filter via various metadata, so last 7 days, last 30 days, that sort of thing, which is quite cool. And the source being locally or remote, and you can filter by that as well.
Yeah.
Excellent. So you can see all of your photos.
Cool.
Ooh.
There's a new feature in Unity called Previews. So on, say, your music files, you could right-click it and presumably select Preview, and it will preview whatever it is.
Actually, you just right-click and it instantly takes you to the preview. Okay. So it'll take if you...
I didn't quite believe it when I read that.
No, it does just work. I tried it today. Cool. You've got like a list of your...
It doesn't work when you point at the screen.
You've got... Yeah, I'm trying to explain it. Okay, I'll work.
On a podcast.
I'll sit on my hands and try and explain it. So you've got, when you sort of search for music, you've got the album covers listed. If you right-click, it'll zoom in to that and show you the full-size album cover. And then on the right-hand side, it'll show you the track listing,
oh, cool.
For example.
Yeah. And it does that. It does like other sorts of documents. So if you've got an office document, it'll show you a preview of the actual text from the document and things like that.
Yeah. And if it's music, does it actual music file, will it play the music?
I don't know, I've not tried that bit.
Because there used to be something that did that.
Oh, in Nautilus, when you hover over a file.
That was really cool.
Well, actually.
It's cool and frightening.
Yeah.
Yes, very frightening if you've left your mouse somewhere.
Yeah. And Ubuntu 12.04.1 is out.
Mm, ooh, the point release.
Catchy.
Yes.
This is exactly the same as if you had a 12.04 system and have kept it up to date.
Yes.
It's just an updated ISO.
Well, yes
ISO.
And no, because if you bought a brand new piece of hardware this week, it is possible that the 12.04 install kernel might not detect some piece of hardware, and there's possibly newer driver and newer kernel in the 0.1 release.
Cool. Okay.
Unity 2D is gone. It is no more. It is an X-Parrot, etc.
It has ceased to be.
So does this mean that when I upgrade, my netbook is not going to be happy?
Probably.
Well, I'm sure it'll be delighted with the new software you're giving it.
The new software rendering I'm giving it.
Yeah, well, which... it depends.
It's all right, it's never got over KDE.
So in the future, when 12.10 releases, there'll be no Unity 2D on the CD.
Right.
So if you install 12.10, it's Unity 3D only. If you have a device that's capable of 3D acceleration, then you'll get Unity 3D hardware accelerated by your GPU.
Right.
If you don't, then it will be using software rendering via LLVM pipe. And so your CPU will be doing what the GPU would be doing.
Right. And leaving not a lot of runtime for anything else, presumably.
It's not that bad, actually.
But just don't try and move your mouse when you're playing a song.
You're thinking of your phone again, yes. Aren't you? Yes. No, it's not that bad. Okay. There's room for improvement, but it's getting there.
Right, cool.
Good luck. Mm. Ubuntu is going to be available preloaded on a never-seen-before computer in a keyboard form factor.
Yes.
Like an Amiga.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yes, or a Sinclair Spectrum, or a ZX81.
Yeah.
Or an Apple II, yes. Yeah, so there's this company who are making computers where everything is inside the keyboard. Like a laptop with a screen cut off.
So you basically walk around with a keyboard?
Well, you don't have to walk
around.
No,
you presumably have it on a desk plugged into a monitor.
It's not portable. It doesn't have a battery. But the thing is, all the computing power is in the keyboard. You just plug a screen in and away you go. So you don't have a box underneath or a box on the desk or anything like that.
Will that work with the Ubuntu Android thing? Because that would just blow your mind, wouldn't it?
I can't keep up with you, Laura. No. It's blown my mind already. I have no idea what you're talking
about.
It's
the Battenberg cake and the apple juice. Yeah.
We think wow. the apple juice might have gone off. Fermented.
Oh my, you've lost it.
UDS has been announced and sponsorship applications were opened.
And now closed.
Oh really, there we
They've
go.
They've got enough money then.
Yes.
Too many people.
Where's UDS going to be then?
Copenhagen.
Where's that?
Denmark.
You can go see the Killing set locations.
I've not watched The Killing.
You should.
Should I?
Mm.
Cool.
Don't watch it before you go though, Alan, because you'll be scared.
Okay.
There's all these murders.
But you could go on a killing tour.
The comfy
not on
wear.
A killing tour, but on a tour. I wouldn't do that.
Oh, thanks for the advice. I'll stick to that.
Sarah Lund will get you.
Wow.
Yeah, that must have been very strong apple juice.
It was.
And finally, Project Sputnik goes beta.
Ooh, I'm excited about this.
This is the developer's laptop, isn't it?
This is the Dell XPS 13.
Yeah.
That,
Avec Ubuntu.
The kind of MacBook Pro alike.
Ultrabook. Ultrabook is what they
sorry,
call
yes.
it.
Ultrabook device, yes.
Excellent. And so can people get it?
So people can get hold of it. If you go to Barton, well, you can't actually because you had to apply and they've right. selected a bunch of people to review it. And
not me.
Did you apply?
I did.
Oh, he's the most
that's
hurt.
Unfortunate.
Did you mention you're the presenter of one of the
you
most,
didn't get, you
the
didn't,
world's no. most popular Ubuntu podcast?
Yeah.
Well, you didn't get a lot of
there
room
wasn't a free
to explain
text box.
Your reasons. Really, you just got to say, I'm a developer, yes, please.
So is this the thing that Mark was using on the keynote?
Yes.
Yes.
At UDS last time?
Yes.
Cool.
It's very nice, actually. I had a play with one when I was at the last UDS. It's a really nice machine.
Is it kind of like a MacBook Air sort of
yes.
form factor? Slim.
Yes, yeah. Very slim.
But
yes.
the idea is that it's got a special Ubuntu image, which is obviously got everything it needs to work with all the hardware, but it's also sort of got all of the developer sort of tool chain stuff pre-installed. So it's got, yeah, all of your
Git
and yeah, so it's got your, I suppose, compilers and stuff, which mm-hmm. you wouldn't normally have in default install, but then it's also got things like Git, yeah, like you say, Git and Juju. So the stuff which developers actually use to write code as well as the stuff which you'd use to...
So it's not a bog, it's not a bog standard 1204 yeah. installation.
Do you think it's any good with sort of media-y sort of things, like that you'd use it for an ordinary laptop, or is it only good for development?
It's not aimed at that.
Yeah.
The target is it's the kind of DevOps and developers who currently are moving away from Windows towards OS X with MacBook Pros and MacBook Airs. It's squarely targeted at that kind of people.
Okay.
Cool. Well, if you've got one, maybe you can write in and tell us whether it's any good or not.
Yeah, they've actually asked people to be very public about their reviews and cool. give their feedback to Dell and Canonical about, you know, every aspect of the laptop.
Excellent. Well, that's all in the bit about Ubuntu, but we've got one piece in the not about Ubuntu, and that is that Diaspora has become a community project.
I'm on Diaspora, I think.
Someone added me on the Diaspora today, and I opened it up to see a picture of a kitten posted by Alan Pope 11 months ago, which I now realise is your older cat when it was a kitten.
Aww.
And that was the last thing that anyone I follow posted on Diaspora.
11 months ago.
But it's now a community project, so its governance is now owned by the community.
That's never led to any projects just dying quietly in the corner, has it? Community-owned projects? Not looking at Novell.
What was that? Yeah, the folder one.
iFolder.
And all of the other ones. Anyway, well, good luck if you're interested in federated social networking with other people.
He's you a very sour person, right?
I just logged in.
You not give him any apple juice? Is that what
it is? No, I gave him cake and I don't know if he's eaten it.
I have. Anyway, that's all about the bit about and not about Ubuntu this time.
Yes, it's feedback time.
Yay. Woo!
Adrian from Wiltshire emailed in to say,
thank you for 100 episodes of great content. I was the winner of that Viglin MPCL, and I've loved it ever since, aww, even though the first box delivered by Simon was a UHF signal booster. Thanks, Popey.
What?
Long story. Okay, the short version. I'd met up with Simon and I gave him this box and I said, that's the prize for this guy, Adrian, who lives near you in Wiltshire. Yeah. Can you drop it off to him? So he dropped it off and actually I'd given him a box that had just a UHF amplifier thing for your telly. Oops. Yeah.
Good.
One thing I felt missed from the review of the podcast is the one thing that remained true throughout. It's the fantastic and now iconic theme music, which has never failed to keep fresh with the podcast. It was a stroke of genius by Alan to find such a catchy tune. Thank you again for your repeated excellence in broadcasting. Any glitches or giggles, just maintain the appeal. No, right, let's move on to the next comment.
It's all right, Tony. It's the Tony and Laura show. You know that.
That's true.
We should have mentioned the theme music, really.
Yeah, it is great. I'm glad that I found it, not Alan.
And I approved it.
Yes, given it your judicious eye.
Yes.
Robin Catlin commented on the blog post for our 100th episode.
Congratulations, but what is David Dickinson doing in the photo with the cake?
At that point, I went back and looked at the bust and I just sat there and giggled for 5 minutes.
You do look rather orange in the photo.
Well,
Toby,
I blame
Tony's
flash because I am clearly not orange.
How the rest of us not orange?
He must have touched the photo up in some way in GIMP or Bibble or whatever.
No, you really did look like that.
But all I did was sit in the sun.
Well, that would do it.
It was no fake tan.
You're supposed to be a geek. You know, you're supposed to stay indoors, which is why Mark, Laura and I look so pasty.
And I thought I was done.
Compared with your mahogany looks.
Yes.
Mahogany. Yeah. Chris Brown asks,
is there anything that can be done about the poor audio quality on phone interviews?
Yeah, Tony, sort it out.
Yeah. On phone interviews. I really do struggle to hear them, which is a shame because I love everything else about the podcast. Aww. I'll book a hearing test anyway, just in case. I do like that.
Yes, particularly in the last episode, the interview was a bit crackly. Yeah. Basically, we've got a thing, there's a professional phone interface with the telephone lines, and we do ask people when we're interviewing them to give us a landline, but not everybody has a landline.
And I might have forgotten to ask last time.
So they give us a mobile number or a cell phone number, if you're in America, or some funky VoIP bridge or whatever it might be, and so it doesn't sound quite as good. So that's why sometimes it doesn't sound brilliant. But we're sorry about that.
We'll keep trying.
We do keep asking people to give us landline numbers, but maybe we need to get into the 20th century. Century and find some other way of doing it. There you go. And finally, Jemay Carrillo has written in from Australia.
Australian accent.
Oh, God. No. It's been a sort of... Oh, sorry. Let's try that again, shall we? I've been a sort of geek for the past 25 years, with my first computer being a Commodore 64. I've been through every operating system by Microsoft and Apple and had a short time using Red Hat, but now I'm settled Ubuntu. It has made my life complete. In the computer world, I have 3 laptops and a desktop and all run Ubuntu. My fiance keeps thinking that Ubuntu is some sort of African word, person, object, or mistress, as I am on it all the time. And back to my command line days.
I don't think he means it.
Literally.
Alan really has gone the colour of a sideboard now.
Oh dear, we've lost him.
Well, thank you, Jemay, for writing in.
All your feedback.
Glad that you had a nice time with Ubuntu. And thank you.
Oh dear, it's the lobby all over again.
Thank you. Thank you for listening, and that's all for this episode. You can find out how to get in touch with us.
Alan continues laughing.
On our website, squeaks.
You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website podcast.
ubuntu-uk.org, including voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds, Facebook and IRC channels. Let us know what you think of the show and give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. Join us on Tuesday, the 11th of September, for our next live broadcast.
Well done, Laura.
Hopefully we'll have got over the giggles by then.
Yeah, and I'll put that picture of Alan up again.
Yeah, I think it needs to go in this show.
Thank you.
And thank you also to Katie Dumont for her Don't Panic stickers, which we'll put a photo up as well.
Adorning phones and Kindles and Nexi everywhere. So thank you to Katie. I think I need a breather and some fresh air. See you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.